Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Pyro Toasty Talks. Brian and Zona here from BZ Furfur,
Hello.
and today we have a very special episode. We are revisiting a topic that we talked about back in season one, which is pricing your work. This was probably the episode we got the most feedback on because clearly people want to know how to price their work. It is something that we all struggle with. So we scoured the pyrography world to find somebody who we felt would have a really good perspective on this. And we were lucky enough to get the lovely Megan from Honeybee Zines. Did I get that right?
You got it.
All right. So, Megan, do you want to introduce yourself?
So I'm Megan. I'm up in Canada. I live on Vancouver Island. I've been burning things professionally, I'd say, for probably about 7 years now. I started after my fourth kiddo was born. I think it's about 6 months or so. And then I started burning things. I've always been kind of a artsy person, and then a friend of mine had a wood burning pen. I thought, oh, I could maybe do that, and so grabbed that, and apparently I can. So in the early ages of doing that, I definitely was awful, and so I think just with like most art forms, if you persevere, then hopefully you get better. So yeah, I've been super happy to be part of the pyro community for about 7 years, and I've done over that time a bunch of art shows and different, venues for my work. I have a farm up in Canada on Vancouver Island. So we've got 25 acres with cows and donkeys and chickens and goats and all that stuff. Two very barky dogs, as you heard before. About 3 years ago or so, I stepped into owning a boutique shop where I live. And so we're a pretty cool little spot, if I do say so myself. We only stock artisans, so real humans who make things within about 130 kilometers from us. So I don't know what that is in miles, but it is a pretty close proximity to our store. So we've got lots of local artists, lots of local cool things. So yeah, so I've got four kids, doing all the mom thing, all the work thing, all the farm things, and happy to be here today.
I have a quick question for you before we get into the topic, just about the boutique. So you said that you only stock things that are made by artisans, things that are crafted. So, like, what is the delineation, right? Like, do you consider something to be crafted if it's only made using like traditional techniques, like is it provided that it's made by hand? Like, how does the are there restrictions that you have, or how do you, or is it just
Yeah,
kind of like, do you have just kind of like a vibe check?
vibe check is a huge part of it. And it's really like, did a human, for the most part, make this thing? And so, like, in some way, shape, or form, did a human brain and a human part of some part of them create a thing, right? So, there's a lot of ways to incorporate technology to be able to help people do what they do quicker and more efficiently. So it doesn't have to be like I knit this with my two hands and that's it. So we definitely have people who use lasers, who use pottery wheels, who use like there's like whatever. But I want a human with a story and a personality and a heart to have made the items in my store.
I think that's a really interesting way of distinguishing to say that it was made with somebody, like with it, like it was made with intention, right? It was made with a story. It has something behind it because, like, we have friends who do like digital art, and a lot of work goes into that. But you know, a lot of people consider that not a not not to be handmade or handcrafted because it was done using something digital. But then you made a good point about pottery wheels. Is pottery wheel like, does that, is that different than making something, making pottery by hand? I don't think so. I think that you're just using a tool to make it, right? Because a pottery wheel is going to give you something that's much more symmetrical, that's, you know, that has a different look to it. And I think that is a perfectly legitimate way to make something. So I'm glad that you are that you have that perspective, because I think that it does open it up to a whole different category of artists that maybe don't always have a place to showcase their work.
I mean,
Totally.
like we have, I'd say over 130 artists in our time. We have, it's a very tiny store. And I know every human who made all the things. And like some people use, like they, you know, whatever, I can't remember the name for it. It's not a Cricut, but like that kind of thing that like cuts vinyl and they make signs and they put it, like make their frames and they put it together, right? So like there is technology and tools being incorporated into that, but it's still a human who designs it, envisions it, pulls it together and has a story and a family and a life that makes puts heart into
Handmade.
the creations.
I mean, it's still handmade. It's very interesting. Like, I had this conversation with a good friend of it, like our friend, and it blew my mind. She was telling me, because she does photography. She does
Sure.
photography and she does painting and she does a couple of different things. And we were having this conversation about photography, and she was telling me that for a long time, like digital photography was not an acceptable form of photography because they considered it not a true form because digital. And I was like, no way. Like that just blew my mind. She's like, yeah, you know, in the photography world, it had to be traditional, like film and the dunking and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, that just amazed me. And she was just like, yeah, and this, and she was telling me all about it. And I was just like, that was just so amazing to me. And then we got into this conversation about all the different more quote unquote modern ways that art is done. Because she also does digital art where she mixes things. Like she'll take a picture, she'll do a painting, she'll take a picture of it, and then she will draw digitally things and superimpose it. And like, and just her art is like really interesting because she'll superimpose things and she'll draw things, and it's just wild what she does. And Half my office is
yeah,
decorated
she
with this
uses a
stuff.
lot of her art, and it's like, but her art is, she'll get turned down in art shows because the minute she says digital, they're just like, nope, because it's not art. But it, part of her art is stuff that she's painted, but because she's added digital, they're just like, no, because it's not art. And it's like, but it is. I don't If
understand.
there's a heart behind it, then it's art, you know,
Exactly. And it's
like.
just like, and they're like, no, because it's not whatever. It's not, it's digital. And it's like, but it's I
still
like
art. It's still an art form.
I like that distinction.
It's just wild to me.
We've
And
nicknamed Zona's pyrography and Liz's digital art as misfit mediums,
yeah.
because we end up getting turned down for so many things. We want to do a show just for the misfit mediums.
We for the
We
Misfits.
were, yeah.
Fantastic. Planning on doing a show called Misfit Arts this year, and then we realized that
We need more time.
we needed more time to put it together. We were not prepared to do it this year. There were a lot more working parts in it that we were not prepared
Let's
to.
get funding. That's what it boils down to.
It's besides it's funding and a lot of other things, but there were a lot more working parts to it than just the funding. But we were not prepared for the work that it was going to take. But we are Could
still
be a lot going of,
to do
a lot of moving parts for sure.
For
it.
sure.
Yeah, because it wasn't just us. We talked to a lot of people, and they were just like, "Oh my God, that would be amazing to be able to put together a art show specifically for the mediums that are not traditional, because there are so many art shows and it's the traditional ones, and that's great. But I am in art shows and it's like I will never win. And I know this because the people judging it don't know how to judge me. What Right. Or there's like a perceived hierarchy of quality or whatever, or worth and value. And it gets super discouraging sometimes if your art form isn't maybe one of the elitist ones. You know, like I'm not an oil painter, so what do I do with my life? Right.
And
I realized that it was becoming disheartening for me entering in
Totally.
shows because I had to like realize that I was entering the show to display my work, and that was really what it was, just to display it and get my name out there, and not with the intention of winning, right? That's what I had to enter these shows knowing, not with the
There's a
hope.
kind of a discouraging perspective to be launching into that with, hey, in some ways.
It is, but at the same time, what I realized is that like I would go and I would unwrap my work and people were knowing where my work was without me even knowing. Like I would just put my work out and they were like, I know who's that. That's your work. Like I didn't even have to say anything. And they just knew that it was mine. People would look for it and they were like, oh, I saw your work down there. And they just already knew. People were looking for my work already. And that was
That's
nice and that
cool.
was encouraging.
For sure.
So that was always nice, but it was still, it was discouraging knowing that I would never get the blue ribbon.
Right.
That
You had
was
to
the
shift
hard
your
part.
motivations for why you shifted your why. Like, why am I doing this? Had to pivot.
Yes, I had to because it was building resentment to not ever get it. And it was just like, but I know, like I look at the blue ribbon and be like, okay, I know my work is better than that. Why didn't I win? I was just like, I
Well,
can't have that resentment.
speaking of perceived value, I think one of the things that we struggle with the most, and I'm sure you do, and I think you bring an interesting perspective because working with so many other artists in your in the field of curation, like how do you value your work? Do you value it based off of the amount of time that it takes to create something? Do you value it based off of the skill that it takes? Is it more based on materials? Or how do you take a piece that you created and put a dollar amount on it?
Yeah. That is, of all of the, aspects of entrepreneurial existence and trying to be, make a go of it as an artist, the pricing point is definitely the thing that I hear be the biggest struggle point of across the board for everyone. And I think for me personally, with my art side of things, when I first started, similar, like no idea. And qu my quality of work when I first started was not at the level that it was now. So, price point for me has shifted as my skill has. and my time is kind of like, it's an interesting thing because, like, the better I think we get at something, the faster we can be at something. But that doesn't mean necessarily that our price works along at the same level. So it might take me less time to do something because I've done it for 7 years, but I don't necessarily charge less because it took me less time. Right. So initially, when I did a pet portrait, because I do mostly I do pet portraits and animal portraits primarily is what I do. The animal pet portraits are the majority of my customs work. And then most of my gallery pieces or my like art exhibit pieces tend to be West Coast critters in nature, within kind of some extra things spliced in there for fun. But a pet portrait now doesn't take me as long as it used to, but I don't charge less because it takes me less time because my quality is more, right? So there's a lot of variables that kind of work into play there. But because I know how long a pet portrait is going to take me, I can come up with a fairly standardized price list for my custom pieces in that regards.
Do you
Right.
set like a rate? So you say, okay, this is gonna like, do you look at it and then estimate, okay, this is probably gonna take me 8 hours. And, I'm going to give myself a rate of X dollars per hour. So that's gonna come to a cost of Y plus whatever the cost
Yeah,
of materials are.
basically. And so for most of my pieces, first of all, I don't generally do pieces that take me 8 hours. because the price point of those pieces would be hard for me to move. So if I'm doing a piece that is going to take me that long, it's either something that I have to go into because I'm creating, because I want to, and it's fulfilling kind of those artisticy creative needs that I have in me. And then when it's done, if I've invested 8 hours, because okay, so I basically I like to do $45 to $50 an hour is basically what I kind of like aim at when I'm crafting my piece. So if that's 50 times 8, so that's 400. Yeah. So depending on what it is, that would be a pretty detailed piece for me because I tend to move pretty fast. So I would either set my price point at that with the expectation that perhaps it won't move quickly and I'm okay with that, or I would lower the price point to something that I would feel okay with, just to make it go away because I don't want my art piling up in a heap in my studio. But because I've chosen, this is kind of zona, you're like shifting your why, right? Like, why am I doing this? So I made this piece because I wanted to, because it served a creative purpose for me. Then I might be more flexible on my price point as to what I let it go for within a range. So if it took me 8 hours, the top end would be 400. Maybe I might let it go for three, 275 if I really like the person. You know, like I had the flexibility to decide what I want to do with that because my reason for making that piece is different than my reason for making a custom pet portrait that I'm doing for someone else. My why is very different with that. So my ornament sizes are usually $45 because I know it's probably going to take me half hour to 45 minutes. My coaster size pieces are 65 because I know it's going to take me under an hour. Right. My 8x10s are probably about 175 because it's going to, right. So I can, because I know how long they're going to take me. If a pet portrait has more things in it, then I'll kind of flex it around that. But I kind of know how long they're going to take me. And I'm fairly consistent with that because I've done like 20 million pet portraits. So it's kind of a good system with that one. For my other pieces that I do, just kind of for fun, I kind of try to keep an eyeball on how long something takes me so I can price it accordingly. But basically, I mean, for my market, because that's the other thing, where you are and the demographic who's going to buy your stuff is going to weigh in significantly on what your price point is at. So if you're in a super bougie area where people are like, take my money, then maybe you can price your stuff a bit higher, right? Not all of us live in those areas.
Right.
And
But
stuff
we
is
can all
expensive.
visit them and
We can
take do
all, if
markets
you
there.
have money like that and you're like, I'm really looking for somewhere to dump a ton of cash, come to Qualicum, BC, because I can help you with that problem, basically, right? Like, but I mean, and so then also, you know, our economic situation of so many things is Bananarama. Like, gas is $1 million, food is $1 million, everything is $1 million. So, people don't necessarily have the cash flow to throw at unnecessary items, which there's an argument that art is necessary, but if you're going to choose between a piece of wall art and milk, you know, you're probably going to choose food, right? So
I
all of
think of
that.
it more as mandatory versus discretionary, right? Like
Okay, that's a,
you.
yeah, I like that.
Yeah, because I mean, food is mandatory. Art is discretionary. Yes,
Yeah, that's a good distinction. I like that. Yeah. So I mean, there's lots of, depending on your demographic and your area and how people like to spend their money, that's also going to impact how you price things. Like, I have a bit of a bougie art show that I go to in the summertime. That's kind of an art or a music festival and an art show all at the same time. And so people tend to, because just the nature of it, if you have money to buy the tickets to enter, typically you have money to be able to buy things once you're in as well. So you just get a demographic of people who tend to have a bit of extra money to spend around. But even at those, like, I panic drop my prices. Like, when things haven't moved, I've like ripped off price things, like slashed it, threw on new stickers out of like desperation, right? So you kind of, it's a moving target all the time.
Do you think that doing that devalues your work or devalues the work of artists as a whole?
I mean, to a point, I think so. And then also sometimes you just need to do what you need to do, right? Depends on how invested you are in holding on to a certain piece. Like there isn't a right or a wrong in that, I don't think. And I mean, sometimes we want to hold on to that ground, and other times we're like nuts to that. I just want this piece gone. So I think there's definitely, it's helpful if en masse everyone sticks to a certain range, but it's hard because I mean, everyone's demographic is different. So it's going to dictate whatever, my price point is going to be different than where you guys are. And so there isn't really a standard. And then, I have people who use lasers and stuff doing different art forms. And then, I mean, they have, like, I've been at shows where I've seen a wood burning artist. And then down a couple of stalls away, there is like a laser art, right? And then you have laser art that can sell for $20 for a piece that if I did it by hand with the time that it would take me, my skill level, da 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 da, it would be at least double, maybe triple what that is. So it's tricky when there's so many different factors coming in. I mean, in an ideal world, yes, we all hold our ground and we all claim, stick to our like this price point because it's what it's worth, and we don't want to devalue our craft. But then I don't know, it's hard sometimes to stick on that when people come in and they look at your piece and they're like, oh, this is really nice. And then they look at the price point and they've like put it back and then they walk away. And then you're like, oh, that's a hard position to be in. That part sucks.
It absolutely does. And I think, especially in the beginning when I first started, that was like the most disheartening part about it. When they would come in and they're like, you can only see it in their face. They're like, ooh. You know what I mean? And they try to keep their face neutral.
Or they
But
don't try and they're just like full judgy face and you're
yeah,
like,
there's some that had the full judgy face. And then you had some that were just like, they tried to keep the neutral face and they didn't do a very good job, I mean, there were some people that were honest about the I can't afford this. Not that your price is too high. I just really can't afford it. And it's like, okay, well, I respect your honesty because I know honestly that the price is higher than probably your normal, what you probably expected to come in buy and purchase, but it is what it is. And it for a while it was like, maybe I should lower it. Maybe I should lower it. Maybe I should lower it. And then it came down to a point where it's like, I can't lower the price on this piece because I just can't, because I know what it took for this piece. And then there were some pieces where I'm like, yeah, we could just lower that because
Yeah, and so
that's
that's where
natural.
it's such gray area. Like, it's not a hard, fast system. Like, it really is. There's certain pieces that no, you're gonna be like, no, this is what it's worth. And I know it's what it's worth. And you hold out for the person to come along and get it. And then, yeah, there's other pieces that you're like, well, whatever, I'm tired of looking at this one. Just make it go away, right?
There's some that
And so, like,
there's like
I can't handle this thing getting packed up in my box again. Just like,
as like Renee said at one, she's like, I will sell a bag of Cheetos.
She said she had Renee. I don't know if you know Renee. Renee used to be a regular on the show. She
Like a Cheeto.
she said she had a piece that she, at one point she hated it so much she'd be willing to trade it for a bag of Cheetos,
The baggage,
and
right?
she was gonna
We do.
throw it
We
in the
get those pieces.
garbage. But David made her hold on to it, and eventually she sold it for her asking price.
Yes. And I think that's what it is because I mean, I've had pieces that I was like, Lord, give me strength, please. Can you please go home with somebody? And then it found a home. And I was just like, and I've told people, I've been waiting for this piece to find a home. And they're like, really? Because I love this piece. I'm like, I've had that piece for like 2 or 3 years. And I'm so happy that it has finally found a home with somebody.
And I think
And
there's like
it's amazing.
there's a range around what you'd be willing to fluctuate within.
Yes.
Right. And so, and that I think is going to come into play with like economic conditions. And so there's going to be, I think, just with, because I see it across like all the different, because we've got in our store, we've got like silversmithery, which is like jewelry, which is like gone skyrocketing. The cost of silver is just crazy. It's like quintupled since like in the last year. It's insane,
One of my good friends, it does silversmithing, and
Yeah.
that's one of her biggest things. She's like, it's blank amount. Can you believe it?
It's
And I'm
crazy.
like,
Like,
whatever you
it's
say,
crazy.
girlfriend, because
No, it's gone from like artists have been purchasing, like, I don't know anything about like making jewelry, but it like whatever they bought it in was like $40 and now it's like 150. Like, it's insane. Like, the amount, like the same amount of silver, whatever they do, it's like it's crazy. So, like, it's and people, you know, people in general, what I see, like what I've seen shopping trends over the last 3 years is people are still wanting to get things, but they have to look for a lower price point. So I think with that awareness, there's ways to pivot to make that work. So in my store, I make sure that there's a range of products for a whole bunch of different price points that are still quality at all the different price points. So maybe in this economic climate, we're not making as many 8-hour investment pieces, and maybe we're making smaller pieces, right? That can go, or we're toning back our design, right? Maybe because you can have a piece that's that size, but you're not spending 8 hours in it. Maybe you're spending like 4 hours, 3 hours on a simpler design, right? There's ways to kind of work with that to be able to take into recognition what the reality of economic conditions are, which is people are like, they're struggling for the most part, like not everyone, but more people than not are more budget conscious. And so I think if our goal going into markets is to earn money to support ourselves as a living, right, then maybe we need to make pieces, some pieces that are more economically relevant to move them.
It is definitely one of the part of the whole pricing concept where I used to think about like, okay, start with the per hour and then charge per hour when I would quote a price for a piece, like when I would do a custom.
Yeah.
And I've rethought the whole pricing scheme when I do a custom. And I've thought about that can fluctuate so much with the piece, right? Because there are just things that kind of happen when you're doing a custom sometimes, especially with a lot of the customs that I do. And I found that it seems to be better if I just kind of do a price, if I just do a, I just quote them a price. And just kind of work within that price. But, and so it's kind of like, okay, if I tell them, let's say $500 for this piece, now it's kind of up to me to stay
Yeah.
within that price. So it's like if I
Yeah,
go
totally.
over that, it's my fault, theoretically,
Totally.
right?
Yeah.
So it's like, but I have to be honest about how long it takes. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, I know how fast I work. I know how long it's going to take me to do this pattern. I know how long it's going to take me to do A, B, and C. So, you
Yeah,
know.
and it makes a difference when you do the same thing often enough that you can build up some consistency there. Because, like, with my pet portraits, like, it's fairly like every critter is different, but basically it's the same. You know, like, I know that this dog is going to take me X number of times, you know, so it's makes it easier to be able to quote consistently. So the only time things go sideways on that is if, you know, I screw up basically, which then, I mean, that's my own bad anyway, which doesn't usually happen. 'Cause yeah, I don't usually do more custom pet portraits are usually what I do, but with like if I'm making pieces for like a show or something, I do kind of now, I didn't used to. But I definitely now think about like what would be a price point that someone would be likely to invest in, and then what kind of design would I want to come up with that would be that price point. So I kind of reverse it a little bit. I didn't used to do that, but just with how people tend to be a bit more budget aware now, I find that that's been a bit of a helpful perspective. And so if I, I find most pieces, because people do recognize original art too, because when you hand do pyrography, everything is an original art piece. And so I do find that there is an acknowledgement of the value of it's not a print. It's not, because I look at some prints that go for almost sometimes the same amount as like my wood burning art. And so this kind of circles back to, I think, what you were saying about societal value on art forms, because, I do see like literally it's a print, it's not an original, it's a print in a frame, but it's, a comparable price point to my original art piece. And so somewhere along the line, like wood burning is not, I don't think, like the equal level to, maybe some other art forms, and maybe people don't understand it as much, or the time that it goes into, or whatever. But in any case, I didn't used to think so much about price point first. I used to just make the art, but I do find just with the reality of things, I have flipped that a little bit around to inform if I'm wanting to make money as opposed to just create. Because I do also make pieces where I just create because I want to. But it's also nice to have some pieces there that the design reflects the price point well and will also still move. Because that's kind of the three points, right? Like, does your design match the price and will it move?
I mean, because you have to. I mean, we got into this because we're creatives, right? Because,
Totally.
I mean, I started the business because I love creating, right? And it was just like, I love the art. So why not make money from doing what I love, which was making art, right?
Absolutely.
And it's just like, well, I'm going to sit here and make stuff. So why not make money from it, right?
Exactly.
So it's just like, well, I wanted to fill my cup, so I'm gonna make it. So let me make money from it. And then it goes backwards too, because it's like, well, okay, I made it. I need to make the money. And then it was just, how much am I gonna charge for this? And then it's just like, well, if I wanted to make this much money, I need to make sure that it's worth that much money.
Yeah.
Right. And I found that with some of the pieces, it's like if I want to charge $5,000 for this piece, got this big piece of wood, and I want to charge $5,000, I have to make this piece worth $5,000. I can't just stick
Yeah,
a couple of
totally.
lines on this, right? So what is it going to take? What kind of picture? What kind of artistry is going to make it feel that it's worth that kind of price tag, that when I make it, when it's done, that when I hang it up and they see that kind of price tag,
Yeah, they're gonna be
they're
like, this
gonna
resonates.
balk at
Makes
that
sense.
price for sure. But
Yeah.
when we talk about it, when I talk about how much time it took, when I talk about what it meant, they can look at it and go, okay, well, that's a big price tag, but, well, maybe it's worth that price. And maybe I can shift some things around and spend that kind of money on it. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
you have to make it worth it. So it's like, maybe it'll talk to them, right? But still, I gotta still fill my cup at the same time.
Yeah, totally. And that's where like it's such a great area. Like, it's not a black or white. This is obviously what pricing needs to look like. But there's so many factors that go into it. And, the main, I don't know, one of the main things that like you don't want to lose in all of this is like, is it still feeding my cup? Am
Yes.
I still feeling like meaning and purpose in this? Like, am I a crankier version of myself because I'm not creating? Or
Yeah.
am I cranky because I'm making this stupid piece of art to sell at this stupid thing that I don't want to be at? Right? Like, right? That ripple effect.
So I have a question for you. Have you ever created a piece of work that you looked at when you were done and said, I don't care how much money someone threw at me. I could not part with this.
Oh no, my stuff can go away. I have zero attachment to anything that I make.
Really? Okay.
No.
Okay.
Zona gets
No,
attached to
my house
everything.
is.
That's not true.
What's that?
Zona gets attached to
That's not
everything.
true. That's not true.
No, I'm like
Sometimes.
I'm like pathologically detached from most things, really. So like that's very letting go is very easy for me. No,
Oh.
my house is filled with like all my friends' art. Like I have like I know everyone mostly who's on my walls here.
Nice.
My studio is full of friends on my walls. No, I have zero desire for any of my art. My kids rapidly, although actually that my kids have my art in their rooms because they've
Oh.
stolen little pieces and so they have it in their room. But no, I'm basically like, okay, I made it, now it's dead to me. No, it can go.
There's only one piece of art that I have that I personally I will not. I can't. And he's determined. He stopped, but he was very determined to sell this one piece. And I was like, no. And I just kept raising the price. And then I finally said, you know what? No, I'm just no. It's
I
for
just
display.
can't.
It's for display. I won't. And then the minute I said that it was for display only is when everybody decided that they were like asking about this piece and how much I would sell it
Well,
for.
there's your next sales tactic. Just throw that for display only
I
sign on all your stuff. Problem solved. Isn't that
Everything is
classic
for display
humanity, though?
only.
Like, what? I can't have that? Well, now I want it. Like,
And
that's such classic psychology. People are so funny.
apparently I walked away and I had put the display on the end. One person apparently got really upset because we wouldn't sell this piece. And I was just like, why are you getting mad? I mean,
Dude, it's my art. I can do whatever I want with it. Get out.
exactly. It's
I
like
know.
it's for display. And apparently this one person got mad that it was for display and we wouldn't sell it. I was like, okay, that's
Sorry, I have a
odd.
little bumblebee that came into my room and came into my house. So I'm trying to like usher her out.
What is it?
So, one of the things that we struggle with is like there are certain pieces that Zona makes that are, you know, we qualify as art, right? There are things that are the pieces that take longer, the pieces that have that inspiration behind them. And then other things that we consider more like product. Those are things that we make a bunch of, right? You know, they're
Yeah.
still handmade, but, you know, like earrings. Right. The you know, we you know, she may make you know, 10 sets of the same earring. They're gonna look each gonna look slightly different because they're handmade, but they're
Yeah, they're the
still
same.
all
They're yeah,
the
comparable.
same
Yeah.
design, the same aesthetic. So do you have a different approach that you use when you are pricing your artwork versus when you're pricing just things that you're selling as product or even commissions? It sounds like you do a lot of commissions.
Yeah, I mean, I do other little bits for art shows and stuff. Like I do wooden spoons and stuff. I stopped doing earrings years ago because I hate them. I hate making them. So I did that. I figured that out real early on. Like I don't do the things that I hate to do anymore. So definitely stopped doing that. But no, I'd say like I think wooden spoons are probably the thing that probably screwed me over the most with price points because people only pay so much for wooden spoon, but that they take so much freaking time. Like they take way more time than they should. And then I'm like, well, I'm not really charging that much money for these, really, with how much time I put into them. So that's another thing that, I mean, that's kind of a mental choice or like a choice that I have to sort through. Am I adding this extra detail on this spoon because I don't want to go insane from so much repetition and I need to break it up by doing something different or else I'm going to like stab myself with this spoon because I hate doing the same thing over and over and over again. And if I'm doing that, then it's my own choice for sanity preservation, basically. Right. So sometimes I put more work into something than I probably should, given the price point, but I have to, or else I'm going to lose my mind because I can't do another carrot, you know, without something else.
Do you try to offset the prices? So if you know that you're going to kind of take a bath on spoons, but you want to do spoons because you know they sell well.
Yeah.
So you know that they're going to take a half hour each. And I'm just making these numbers up, but you know they're
Yeah,
going
yeah,
to take a
yeah.
half hour each. You know that you would normally pay yourself $50 an hour. So, to pay yourself appropriately, you'd have to charge $30 each for the spoons. You know they're not going to sell at that price. So you knock the price down to 15. Do you then try to bake that into other products to try to balance it
No, I
out?
don't really put in that much in that much detail of thinking. Like, I know that spoons fly for me. Spoons fly at $20, and they go a lot less quickly at an increased price. So I, for the most part, do spoons that I can burn and do within a time frame that makes the money worth it. And then if I need to add some extra bits for sanity preservation, then that's my own safety net choosing, basically. But I try, and like as the years have gone on, I've really tried to, for the things that I am creating to put out there for shows, like it's completely my direction what I do on them, right? Because these are not the pet portrait things. These are just like the creative whatevers I want to put up for a show. So I have full agency as to the design that I put on that thing. So it's my choice whether I want to do something really intricate that's going to be a higher price point, or if I want to have some pieces on the shelf or on my display that are less detail, lower price point, so that I have some pieces that will hopefully help me pay off the show that I sold a kidney to afford to be in, right? Because shows are so expensive right now. So I think, I kind of go from both sides. I have that, like, I really want to do this fun, in-depth, detailed, creative, whatever. And then that might sit at a higher price point. And then there's other ones that I also need to make a living and afford to live. So I'm going to do things that are at a price point, excuse me, that people are going to be more readily available to be able to take home with them. And so then my detail and design will reflect that price point. So I kind of work both directions.
I appreciate that. I still think that it's kind of a struggle when you know that it's like, oh man, I'm doing great selling these pieces, but I know that, it took me all of this time to do it. It's kind of a hard pill to swallow sometimes to say, I'm gonna have to pay myself less than what I feel my time is worth just to be able to make the sale. But at the
I
same
mean, to
time,
some
I get it.
degree, but though, Brian, like, so if I, so an 8x10 piece at $150, because that would be kind of reasonable. If I had an 8x10 piece, it would move pretty fine between 125 and 150. So divided by 50 is 3 hours. So if I choose a design that I can burn, that I can draw, burn, paint in 3 hours, then my money's made on that one. So I'm not saying all pieces need to be like that, but
Yeah.
if you want to have a portion to be able to have, because you have to, I think it's helpful to segment in having, like, these are the pieces that I'm doing to afford my life. And then these are the pieces that you still have agency over what the design looks like. It can still be fun and it can still be creative, but I'm going to keep myself within a boundary of parameters so that this is financially viable. Right. And then I have these ones that I'm just going to let myself loose and go crazy on because I really want to be creative and they're going to be higher price point, or, I'm doing it, my why is different. So I'm going to be okay with them going for a lesser price point because my why wasn't earning a living. My why was creation. Right. But I think if you have all of them, then it helps us feel less like a mass producing machine just trying to pump out all the junk to be able to live here. But there is a reality component that if all my pieces were $5,000 pieces in my demographic where I live, I would sell nothing and I would not be able to live as an artist. So there's nothing wrong with having a piece that you've invested and this is where, your creative spark lies. But for me, where I live, I wouldn't be able to live on that one. So then I need to make sure that my display has a variety of options so that these are the pieces that I can live through. And then these are my creative outlets. And you can have them all there. But I think it's helpful if we're trying to live off of what we're creating to factor in the realities of certain economic conditions while still creating space for us to be creative.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's pretty much what it is. I mean, I mean, it would be ideal to, in a perfect world, we could sit here and charge, let's say, $40 an hour for every single piece that we create if we were to break it down. If we were to break it down, by hour and charge ourselves and charge a customer $40, 20, 30, $40 an hour, whatever price we choose, right? Per customer, that would be the ideal thing. But the reality is that we can't, right? It just besides the current climate, that's just not a reality. We have to be able to sell what it is that we create, right? So what is the reality? The reality is that people are not buying our art because it is not a necessity. It is not a mandatory thing. They are buying what they can afford. They are buying what they are choosing because if it's a choice between tonight's dinner and this piece of art, they are going to choose tonight's dinner, right? So when they look at this piece, it's got to connect with them and it's got to be affordable. So the art that's created has to be within that affordability range. Whatever that is up to the artist, right? So
Totally.
whatever that means to the artist is now exactly that, whatever that means. And I mean that can be a very big broad range of things. Like if I wanted to spend, theoretically, if I wanted to spend $20 on a canvas and put another $30, $40 worth of work into it, but I wanted to ch charge a customer $20 for it. I mean, because I just wanted to sell it, but that art filled my cup because I liked that piece of wood and that art that I put on it just filled my cup because it was a palate cleanser and it just kind of made me happy that day. I mean, it filled my cup and that's what it was. I mean, did I take a bath on everything? Yes, but at the end of the day, it made me happy. And that's really
Well,
what
and
it
I
is.
think, no, absolutely. I think it's possible to be, we can absolutely live doing our art, but there's always going to be a part to every job, no matter what you do, that maybe isn't your favorite. And so maybe like in, the reality of crafting a life as an artist, maybe part of that is making art that isn't your favorite, right? Like, I don't know that it's maybe, there might be some artists that are able to do only what, excuse me, only what they love to do. I am not at that level. And so sometimes the art that I'm doing isn't necessarily my most favorite, perfect, like these are the optimum conditions for me to be creating art. Sometimes it is the like, okay, so I know this price point sells. What design can I make that would sell at that price point? But then in that, what could I do with a design of that price point nature that doesn't feel like drudgery? Like, there's always ways that you can work with the realities of your situation. It just, I think it takes a bit of a backwards, like a working backwards perspective sometimes, where like, okay, I know this price would work, so I'm going to do a simple this with some of this, and then, but it still is a rewarding thing. It's just finding ways to match what you're wanting, which is to at some point make some money for doing what you're trying to do.
There's a lot, I mean, there's the balance, like you said. I mean, I there was there's I mean, there's been some things that I've had to make also. Just I don't like a whole lot of repetition. I mean, there's been stuff just like you. I mean, I kid you not, I have a tray of earrings that's been sitting in my
Yeah,
garage
because it's like
for like
drudgery. It's awful.
no lie. Probably been sitting there for going on almost a year now, and I've been trying to talk myself into, you really should
It's
finish
hard though for
should
that.
finish
Yeah, no, I hear you.
finish burning them, you should finish painting them, finish them so you can put them in the package and be done with them and get them off the tray. They're still sitting there.
Oh
Don't
yeah,
want to
for
be here.
sure.
And I'm like, I love the design. I just.
Yeah, so I stepped away from doing stuff like that. That gave me that reaction. I'm like, no. Someone else can do that crap. I can't do that. No. So I definitely, if I have that kind of reaction, I've definitely stopped making that thing. Like earrings and me, no, I stopped doing that years ago.
You
Just
know,
can't
I
handle
think
that
it's
anymore.
just it's the te it's the tediousness of it.
Oh
I just
yeah.
I
It's the
needed a
like
break.
finicky like
I need a break.
assembly
I
thing.
needed a
What?
break. I needed
Like working in the tiny little surface. No, I hate it. Like there's artists who do that and do it well. I'm just like, nope, you can have it. Nope, I don't have to do all the everything.
They sell really. We do really well with them, and that's the
Yeah.
whole thing. It's the I know we sell really well. We do
Yeah. So
very
then it's worth it for digging in and
well.
just doing it anyway.
It
Yeah.
is. It's so worth it. And it's just like, I know I just need to do it. And it's like,
Yeah.
I just need to do it. And it's
Yeah.
just like, I will. I just need to. And I'm just procrastinating is really what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
But it's just, but you get to a point where it's just like, but there's some stuff that I hate. I hate doing. I hate it. And so what I just did is I just kept bumping up the frame. Brian was just like, why don't we just take it off the website? I'm like,
Yeah.
no, because I went viral with it, and I can't, because it was the first thing that I ever made, and it went viral, and I don't want to do that. Because we advertised it, and it was the first thing, and I was like, I don't want to do that. So I just kept bumping up the price, and then we stopped getting orders on it. So that was kind of great.
Yay, problem solved. And
Exactly. And I was just like, but I hate
if anybody does buy it, it'll be worth it because you'll get a
then
ton.
it's worth it because you're getting so much freaking money. You're like, fine, I'll do
Exactly. I was like,
it then.
problem solved. I was like, exactly,
Sounds
problem
great.
solved. But I was like,
Totally.
I hate them. I hate them so
Okay.
much. So, but
I
yeah,
did
I
want
get
to
it.
just I did want to just weigh in on one thing that you said, Zona. So you said that sometimes you make something because it's what you want to make, and the real what you would value it at is $50, $60, but you end up selling it for $20. And I totally get that. I do think that there's a bit of a risk when you do that, not necessarily just for yourself, but for artists as a whole, because when you set your prices too low on pieces, it could inadvertently set expectations of the buyers that this is what something handmade is worth. Something that was handmade is worth $20. And versus what the actual cost of it is. And I'm not saying that you should never do that. I'm just saying that I think people listening should just be conscientious of that when they're pricing their work.
Yes,
Yeah,
I do
I think
want to.
that's a good point.
Yes,
Because we have a lot of people. Sorry, go
caveat
ahead.
when I said that, I those numbers weren't like accurate. I was just throwing out numbers. And I also want to say, I want to point out that that is just like one of those once in a blue moon type of things. That is not something I would actually do. I mean, if I was spending that kind of time and money and materials on something, I wouldn't price it at $20. I've never done something like that. But what I was trying to
I
point out
have
is that,
seen,
like,
though, at certain markets,
I
people
have.
who would burn and have sold it for that price and like
And
physical burning.
I'm.
So it is, I would agree, Brian, absolutely. Like there is, and this is like where it's not a black and white issue. Like there is a line where, yeah, if you are selling your hand burned items at a like an insanely low price, then yes, it does make it hard for the customer to fully value hand. Like actually handmade items, is especially
I've had conversations with artists with that. Like we've been at markets, and I've had conversations with other artists, and I've said, I've told them I do the exact same thing that you do. I don't mean to insult you, but you need to raise your prices because what you
Yeah.
do is beautiful. You do beautiful work. And I do the exact same thing that you do, and I know exactly how much time and effort that you've put into this, and this piece of work is worth more than what you've priced it at. And they've
Yeah.
given me the same thing. Well, I don't know if it's going to sell this any other. Ma'am, yes, it will.
I'm trying to
Yeah.
price match. A lot of people are trying to price match the mass-produced stuff, the drop ship stuff.
Exactly.
I'm
And
like,
you
no.
can't, like, you cannot create a living off of that.
I
And I mean, the people that are looking for mass produced are going to buy mass produced anyway. Like, it doesn't matter whether your price is low or high, like, they're going to not think about it anyway. So, you might as well put your prices for the demographic of people who are going to buy your work, buy, hand burned art, they're going to buy it within like a fairly reasonable price range, right? They don't need it to be at the low laser point mass produced price point because they're like, it's a different demographic of people who are buying those things, right? The person who wants the handcrafted item is going to understand the price point of the handcrafted item. It doesn't have to be at that low mass produced level because it's typically a person looking for a different thing. They want a backstory. They want a heart behind. They want like, and there is a difference. Like, there is a difference. Like, my favorite thing is like when people come into my booth, they're like, oh, is it because a laser done this? I'm like, a laser can't do what I do. A laser can't do what a hand can do. Like, they can't shade. They can't get like, there is a huge difference. And I think people who are looking to invest in art, and there's a wide range of what can fall under that, term as we talked about. But they're like, they'll understand,
I've had
the.
people to touch. I've had people come in and they go
Yeah,
like
right.
nose to nose with my artwork, and they're like
Yeah.
looking at it, and I'm like, you're more than welcome to touch, please.
Yeah, right.
They're like,
Yeah.
oh, but
There's a
I'm
three-dimensional component
afraid.
there.
Yeah,
Yeah.
they're like, I'm afraid to touch it because I don't want to damage it. I'm like, it's all sealed, please touch. And they're like, I'm like, please touch it, feel it. And they're like,
Yeah.
oh wow. I'm like, yes. Touch the textures. There's a
Yeah.
reason for it, you know. And they're like amazed.
So Megan, how do you sell people on the story? Because that's one thing that I think people struggle the most with, right? Is, they know that what they create is worth. They want to charge the amount that is considerate for what they've created, but they don't know how to, like, they're reluctant to give that price. I think Zona said it before, where she said that some people are just like, oh, well, nobody's going to pay that price, or I don't think my work is worth it. Like, how do you get across to the customer that this piece has an intrinsic value because it's handmade, because it's art, because it has a story behind it, when you have sometimes 30 seconds to a minute to talk to a person who's visiting your booth?
I think one of the cool things about wood burning is that, just like a lot of things, it kind of comes around again. And so there's a lot of people who I find did wood burning back in the day in like shop class, or like it was soldering iron, right? They're like, I used to do this, right? And I'm like, well, you know what? Technology has gotten super cool now. And oftentimes I'll bring like my razor tip with me, so I can show people, right? Because I think that visual, when they see that pen in your hand, they're like, oh, it just makes it real, right? And so I'll be like, this is what it looks like now. And they're like, no way, right? Because it's like definitely upgraded, right? Or like, but having, I think just having my burner, if I have power hookup, then I'll be burning away at something while I'm there. And that, I mean, that right there, that does your story for you, right? Because they can see human like fire drawing on wood, right? And so, I mean, visually, that's super cool. If people come in with kids, I'll be like, hey, kiddo, like, what's your best guess on how I make this art? And then the kiddo will go up and they'll be like trying to figure it out. And they'll like, go, sometimes they guess it, sometimes they don't, but it doesn't matter, right? Like, what's your best guess on how I make this? Right. And then you have that conversation with the kid, right? And then the parents are listening, right? Or the grandparents are listening. So they get it as a byproduct, but engage with the kids. Also, don't ever, one of my hugest encouragements to people when they're doing shows, don't ever discount the kid, because so often the kid has money. Like, I can't even tell you the number of times where like the kid has been given money to invest in whatever at the show, right? And they'll buy some of my art, right? So don't ever rule out the kid as being someone who can also be your customer. Engage with them.
That's really interesting that you say that, because I, especially during Christmas, I was telling Brian this over the Christmas holidays, because I was watching like other booths and I was just watching how many kids would come in and they'd look around in our booth for like little things. And I was just like, we should carry like smaller price point things. What is it that we can make that I can that we can offer that's, smaller, five,
That's
$10,
why I do
tiny.
stickers. So I'll do stickers. Like I'll take photos of my art and I'll turn that into the vinyl stickers, right? And so those I sell for $5. I do bookmarks for 15, right? So those are kind of the lower price point items that are easy. Yeah, are
We
easy
do
to kind of like.
stickers, prints, and then for the the lower priced items, she'll do like really simple designs, like on like a cork trivet, or a like a set of earrings, or a bookmark, and those we can usually price at a lower price, and we can do like multi discounts. Like, so if you buy two pairs of earrings or three pairs of earrings, you can get a break. People love getting a bargain. They love to
For
feel like
sure.
they got one over on you.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, yeah, it's if it, it's really, but that's when it comes to the kids. I mean, what we the kids always feel like really cool and like proud of themselves. Like, yeah, I bought this at from that place, from that lady. You know what I mean? And that's
Like
why I was
treat
like,
them like you treat the adults, right? Like give them the same,
exactly.
regard as you would the adults. 'Cause like it shocked me, but like, at some of my markets, like a kid will pull out a 50 and they'll buy, like, 'cause they've been given, money
They've been given
to do what
Christmas
they want with.
money. Here, have money and go shopping for the family,
Totally.
right? Like,
Right. And also, like, aside from they could be a potential customer, like it's also a good human move to treat kids like humans. So like, aside from that, they could actually buy your stuff. It's a good like human strategy to treat kids like real people. So
it's real. What I find funny, what I when we go to, when we're at markets, I always burn on this on site. One, I'm not the people person. Brian is more of the people person, but I like to burn on site. One, because it does bring in the in people, because they always stop and go, "What is she doing?" That's
Yeah,
always the
because it
first.
looks
They're just like,
cool.
"Oh, what is she
Very,
doing?"
yeah.
Right? And then like Brian will, he'll talk to the people, but he's like the Pied Piper. Kids
That's hilarious.
gravitate towards him for some reason. He'll just be standing there and kids gravitate towards him. It is hilarious to me.
It's the educator in me. Well, the educator. I've been a soccer coach. I've been a Boy Scout
It's
leader.
hilarious.
I've been a STEM
Herder of small
teacher.
humans for some time.
Yes.
So I will, when I see the kids are taking an interest, I will give them
They
the.
listen to this whole thing, and it's the kid. And then you know what's even funnier is that I have a small step stool. What I found is that because of my chair, it's really tall, I actually put the step stool in front of my table. The kids will step on the step stool. I put the step stool there for a reason. The kids will step on the step stool so they can down in front of my table and like
That's cool.
watch. And the only thing I say to them is just be careful about moving the table. And they're so good at it because
Oh,
they'll
yeah,
stand
totally.
there and they'll tell everybody else, don't touch the table, don't touch the table. And they'll just sit there and they'll
Totally.
watch and they'll like ask questions. And like they're especially during the Christmas holidays, because I'll personalize on the spot. So they'll sit there and they'll talk and they'll be like, ooh, what, you know, that's my ornament that she's doing. And it's like really
Yeah, that's
cool. And
super
they'll talk
cool.
and I'll engage with them and then he'll engage and be like, oh, well, he'll explain how I do it. And then like the parents are listening and then they'll talk about it. And like he does during the holidays, he does the Elf on the Shelf inside of our booth. So like
Can I talk about the Elf
he
on the Shelf?
does all, I guess
Can
I'm
I talk about the
sorry.
Elf on the Shelf? So, last year, well,
2 years ago.
2 years ago, we were getting ready to do our holiday market, and we had just got invited to this big holiday market that we've been waiting for years to get invited to because we had heard such good things about it. So, we packed up all of our Christmas decorations, and there was an elf on the shelf in the box with the Christmas decorations. So I decided to name her Sassafras, and she was
Amazing.
going to be our elf on the shelf. And I would hide her around the booth, and then when a family would come in, I would explain to the kids that we have a mischievous elf on the shelf who hides in our booth, and like I would task them with the duty of finding Sassafras, and they loved it. And the
Oh,
parents
yeah.
would just kind of hang out and look at the stuff while the kids are looking around the booth. And then when they would
Smart.
find her, I would be like, okay, now you need to help me find a new hiding spot for her. And then so it was like this kind of engagement that we can have. And it gives Zona enough time to kind of talk to the parents because while they're in
Yeah,
there, they're
totally.
just looking at ornaments or, and that they start asking questions. And, it's a good way to sometimes you just have to get people's attention enough because
Yeah,
they're.
totally.
They're gonna buy, but you just have to get them to, you got to get them to take the time and appreciate it because there's
Well, and that's
a
it, to
hundred other
like
booths.
connect with what's there,
Connect.
because we're such skimmers. Hey, as a society that we just like skim and scan things
In and
and
out. It's just like,
yeah, right? So, but to connect with it and to meet, I mean, that's why people love markets and love to going to things like, because they meet the person who made the thing. So you can connect with the human behind the art, which is a really cool thing. So if they're there for long enough to be able to connect and see and, you know, like that's huge.
It's at, I mean, that's why I loved going to the markets. I mean, the way I've always dealt with markets is like, I always loved going to a market. I loved going to markets and fairs and street fairs and all of that stuff. Why? It's because I want to, I like window shopping and I like talking to the people and I like seeing everything that's there. And it's like, so. If that's why I like going, I assume that that's why everybody else likes going.
Totally.
So,
Well, because if they don't like that, then you're going to the big box store and buying something from China. So it's
exactly.
so yeah, you can
So,
make the assumption that if they're there, they're at least semi-curious about you and what you do.
exactly. So,
You just got to watch out for the husbands who try to pull their wives through as quickly as possible so that they don't spend
this is
any money.
true. She'd like set up a bench for them to sit on or something. Be like, hey, that's the waiter bench over there.
You need to set up a little PlayStation for them to
Yeah,
they can
exactly. Right here,
play
your
Call of
Nintendo
Duty
DS
on.
and your headphones, you sit here. Yeah,
We're gonna park you right here, sir.
that's hilarious.
Okay, so last question that I had was advice for people or things that like maybe traps that people might fall into that you think you encountered that people starting out or who are still struggling to kind of find their route through this whole pricing maze would benefit from.
Yes. Yeah, I think excuse me, I'm getting over a cold. I think the biggest thing is knowing your why. Because when we fix our, like, why are we doing this? Why am I making this piece? Why am I choosing this path for myself? Why am I doing this? Because if we're fixing our whys on, external things and like what this person is doing and, on variables, essentially, then I think we can get lost in our process. But if we're, I am making this art, I'm choosing this path because it helps me be a better version of myself. I'm a better me when I'm creating. So then, why am I making this piece? Well, I'm making this piece so that I can build up some income so I can make this other piece where I can be really creative and full throttle, right? Why am I doing this market? Well, I'm doing this market because it gives me the income to be able to do this other random market that doesn't pay as much, but it's full of really cool people and I really love to do it, right? So, why am I doing this? Because I think if we're firm on our why, then it helps us weather all the other things. And it also helps us, I think, be more at peace with the decisions that we make, right? So, why am I setting the price point at this level? Well, because I have this many years put into it. I feel strongly about this. It has this much detail in it, and it's worth this much, right? Why am I lowering this price? Well, because I have this bill that came up unexpectedly, and this kid needs dental work, and my donkey needs medication, and so I just need to move some stuff. So I'm going to reduce these prices to get them gone because I've got bills to pay, right? If we're clear on our why, then it doesn't feel like a haphazard scramble show where we're barely hanging on, right? It doesn't matter what your why is, in my opinion. As long as you're intentional and clear on what that why is, then we don't tend to regret the decisions that we make. It's, I think, when we're not clear on our whys, then our decisions become regrettable. And then we're like, oh no, why did I do that? Is the question that we ask ourselves when we're in the state of chaos that we created. Like, what was I thinking? Why did I do this? Right. So if we can be clear on our whys ahead of time before we do the thing, then we tend not to regret the thing.
I didn't
Love that
have
perspective.
donkey medication on my bingo card for this episode. So if anybody did, please.
You didn't? I don't
No.
understand.
I need my little stamper for my bingo card. No, that's an excellent way of putting it.
I like
And
that
I think that's something that
perspective.
we forget about far too often. Is why we're
Yeah, because
doing
then we
this,
become
right?
reactionary, right? And reactionary is never a good place to be in, right? But if we ask ourselves, why am I doing this ahead of time, then it's proactive. And we don't tend to regret, like maybe in retrospect, we're like, dang, that didn't work out. But we don't tend to regret that, right? We regret the things where we weren't clear on our whys ahead of time.
So, did you have any closing thoughts, Sona?
I was just thinking about how, like, we started this because we love the art and we wanted to turn it into a business to make money, but that somehow along the way, a lot of people switched it and was like it became more of a focus on money. And now we have to create the art to make the money instead of, okay, we're making art.
Because
Now
you
we've
want
just,
to.
right. Do
And
you know what I
making money
mean?
is
Is
the is the
product
it's
of
the
the art,
gravy.
right? Do you know what I mean? And it's like, I like the perspective of the why, not the money. I like that. Like
Did
the
you
money can still come, but we tend to not regret as much where we end up if we're clear on our why ahead of time. Yeah, I like that. I like the focus being on the why and not the dollar sign.
So I think that's as good a place as any to wrap this up. Megan, where can people find you?
Well, my website is garbage, so definitely don't go there. I'm the worst ever at updating that it exists.
That is not the
You know
name of
what?
the
Social
website. I
media.
make websites for a living, so don't make me cry.
Oh, dude, don't go on that website then. Tears will follow. Instagram's probably the best. So at Honey Designs, it's, a ridiculously difficult name, so it's not hard to find because it's only one of me. So there's a bonus to that.
We will put it in the show notes as well. So,
Brill. Yeah. Fun.
all right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. Amazing insight into
Thanks for having me. It was
yeah,
thank you for agreeing. Thank you for sitting down and having this conversation and appreciate your insight. Love the insight.
so if you want to find Zona and me, you can find us on Instagram at bzfurfur. We also have a website, bzfurfur.com. To find the podcast, you can find us at Pyro Toasty Talks. You can also find us at pyrotoastytalks.com. Our website is not garbage.
Oh, I should
Yeah,
definitely go there.
definitely. You'll find links on the website to the Discord server. We're now partnered with Woodburnt Corner. So we have a Discord channel on their server where you can talk with other pyrographers and you can discuss the podcast, offer suggestions for future topics and suggestions for guests. You can also buy t-shirts on the website. All the proceeds from the t-shirt go to supporting the podcast, so we appreciate all of those. We'd also like to remind you to check out It's David and Renee at itsdavidandrenee.com. Check out Woodburn Corner at woodburncorner.com. And special thanks to Lucas Luan for the intro music. And stay toasty.